We welcome you to another live edition of the Sports Box, brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And by our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and check them out at www.crowdplayapp.com for details. Ladies and gentlemen, it's showtime.
Hey everybody, welcome to Cage My IQ. I am your host, D-Bake. Joining with me once again is Jim. How's it going, Jim?
What's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing good. Not too bad of a day. Getting ready to get my shot tomorrow. That's why we're recording right now.
Nice.
But how excited are you for this Saturday night? The UFC 261 triple championship fight card.
This is huge, man. I'm really excited for this. Not only is UFC giving us a knockout of a pay-per-view, but it's a great weekend for MMA. You know, you have PFL debuting the day before. This kind of breezes in. It's fantastic. I'm looking forward to this weekend.
Yeah, April has been a nice month for if you're an MMA fan. Between that, one championship being broadcast in the U.S., for the first time, just a whole bunch going on. And then What a way to just take it up to the next level than to bring fans back to UFC in Jacksonville and had three title fights. Like this card is pretty stacked on the main card. And then even the prelims are pretty nice. They actually have a few Asian guys fighting in this. Usually they have one or two, but they have five on this card. So they're trying to bring out all the foreigners for this fight card and get them some coverage.
Yeah, and about 90% of the belt have been defended in the first quarter of the year, which is amazing.
Yeah.
I think the only one that hasn't been defended is the flyweight, but that was defended late in 2020.
Yep, so, late 2020, and it's going to be defended again in the rematch in the beginning of June.
Yeah, so you're getting a summer where all these titles could change hands again if they change hands tonight or this weekend.
Yep, I'm excited, and I love the format right now where it looks like they're just going to do the fan cards just for the pay-per-view. They're going to just see them for the pay-per-view until they COVID gets a little bit better. Then they will probably move the fight night ones on the road as well. But I like how they're utilizing UFC Apex still.
Yeah, if you have it, use it, right? It's brought them some money throughout this wicked time that we're in. So it's nice to see that that's still going.
Yep. But let's get started with this main card predictions. The first fight on the card is a light heavyweight matchup between Anthony Lionheart Smith going up against Jimmy Crute. What do you think about this fight?
Yeah, this is a great matchup between a young and upcoming fighter in Jimmy Crute versus an established former title challenger in Smith. Crute's coming in with 12-1 and fighting a two-fight streak, and can get it done fast with all but one of his UFC wins ending in the first round. Now with Smith, since the John Jones fight, he's been 2-2 in his last four fights and is looking to piece together his own win streak. With this fight, I see Crute trying to get this fight done like he has previously, get it done in the first round, push the pace, keep Anthony Smith on his heels, and both of these guys have the power in their hands, and they can also really knock you down, get you down on the ground and control the ground. But Anthony Smith is a little more advanced on the ground. I can see this fight ending two ways. I can see the first being Crute get this done quick, in and out, and the second he goes into deep water and he has to see how he can fight an established vet. All in all, I'm going with Jimmy Crute, my first round KO. I think this is going to be just like most of his resume. I believe that Smith likes to take his time in the first round and plan his attack. And with Crute being more aggressive than most of the previous opponents for Smith, I think Smith is going to leave himself open and Crute's going to knock him out.
Yeah, one good thing in this matchup is Anthony Smith doesn't want to get put on his back. That's where he's weak. When he gets put on his back, he's not very good at defending himself. He's going to want to keep this up. He's going to want to keep it a striking matchup, even though Jimmy Crute has the advantage there. One thing that's going to be difficult for Anthony Smith to defend is the takedowns. He usually gives up the takedown very easy, which is a big thing for Jimmy Crute. Jimmy Crute has a wrestling background. He does the takedown very well. So he's going to look to take the fight down to the ground and go for a ground and pound or submission. Like, as long as he can get the fight to the ground, Jimmy Crute has this in the bag. That's all he has to do is get to the ground. Well, if it keeps it standing, there's that one chance that Anthony Smith could finish him. Anthony Smith had a rough 2020. He got his teeth knocked out in their first fight by, I think it was Glover Teixeira. Then he came back in his second fight and then just got annihilated by Alexander Rakic. But then he redeemed himself against Devin Clark, which was a lesser opponent. So it remains to be seen what form of Anthony Smith that we know. He has a wrestling background, but he either uses it or he doesn't use it. This would be the time that he should use it. He should take down Crute and get him on his back instead of keeping himself at a disadvantage by not doing that. He's going to want to get Crute down instead of letting Crute get him down. So it's going to be interesting to see who gets who down first, because I feel like the fight's going to go to the ground at some point. It's just that whoever gets that first shot is going to have an extreme advantage in this matchup, and I think it's going to be Jimmy Crute. And I don't think he's going to finish him. I think this is going to be the first time he's going to go into deep waters, and I feel like he's going to manage it well, being a little bit younger. As you see, he's only 12-1 compared to Anthony Smith's 33-16, and he's the -195 advantage over the underdog of Anthony Smith, who's +165. I think this is going to be probably a unanimous decision by Jimmy Crute.
Okay, there's not a lot of tape on Jimmy Crute going in deep waters. He's only been to the third round once in the UFC, and that was against Paul Craig, who's a dangerous grappler as well. And he was able to submit Paul Craig, I believe, with a Kimura. Mm-hmm. But then you go back to Crute's fight against Misha Cirkunov, where, again, first round exit, but on the other side of the win column for Jimmy Crute, where he got a Peruvian necktie tap out. So it's I'm curious to see the strategy for Anthony Smith. He usually starts very kind of feeling out, testing his range. But Crute's a bulldog, man. They call him the brute for a reason. He's head down, mm-hmm. ready to smash you. I could see this going really quick, but Anthony Smith does have a tendency to drag on fights because of his defensiveness.
Yeah, and Anthony Smith, he's a tough guy. That's why they call him Lion Arm, because he's a tough as nails. He takes whatever. Like, he got two teeth knocked out of him, and he was still going. So he's definitely on the underside of his career, but he's going to still present a good challenge for Crute. I just think that Crute's going to be too much because of his speed and wrestling.
Yeah, this is really the big test for Jimmy Crute.
Yeah.
Anthony Smith, former title challenger, perennial top five. It's curious. It's a very curious matchup. And if this is a big win for Jimmy, Jimmy Crute wins this. This is a huge win. Gets him up maybe closer to that title against Jan.
Yeah, because you got two or three guys that are moving up into the top 10, like prospect-wise. You got Jimmy Crute, you got Magomed Ankalaev, and then you got the winner of Paul Craig and Jamal Hill. One of those two is going to move into the top 10, and you're going to have three guys within that 6 to 10 range that are fresh faces in the top 10. So it's going to present a great coming of age of that division with John Jones out. Now you got Jan Hovic as champion. He's going to be fighting Glover Teixeira, a guy that knocked Anthony Smith's teeth out. they're going to be fighting around Labor Day weekend. So you're going to have some moving and shaking in that light heavyweight division, which I'm glad for, because it's not going to be the same old faces and then just John Jones defending it whenever he's there, since now he's moving up to heavyweight.
You also have Santos, too. So Santos could be looking at the winner of this fight, a rematch with Anthony Smith, a new matchup with Jimmy Crute. So there's a lot, like you said, a lot of moving and shaking in the light heavyweight division.
Yep. But let's get moving on to the second fight on the card, which is a middleweight matchup between Uriah Hall versus Chris Weidman. This is the second matchup between them. The first one was just about, like, I think it was 8 to 10 years ago, where you had Chris Weidman, I believe he knocked out Uriah Hall around the Ultimate Fighter finale, I think it was. But this is a matchup where they're going in, they're in two opposite directions from back then to now. But what do you think of this matchup?
Yeah, first, I have to go back and watch that fight. I don't even remember that happening, so I'm definitely going to have to watch that. But with this fight, you're talking about underside of their career, right, with Anthony Smith. I think the same applies to Swatman, honestly. This is a very interesting fight and is really based on, in my opinion, which Uriah Hall shows up. Hall's coming in 16-9 and riding a three-fight win streak. But historically, just when Hall is making the turn to take the next step, he struggles with turning the corner. Now with Weidman, he's on the back. He's back after an 8-month level layoff and looking to capitalize off that win against Magomed Akhmedov. Both of these guys are talented, but I give the stand-up edge to Hall and the ground game to Weidman. I can see Weidman shooting and trying to wear down Hall by controlling the time on the ground, where I can see Hall beginning defensive as he does, trying to get a time for Weidman's takedowns and to gauge the distance. But like I said in the beginning, this fight depends on which Uriah Hall shows up. There's a Hall who's dynamic and can knock you out, knock you unconscious, and then there's the Uriah Hall who doesn't want to hurt people or isn't passionate about fighting anymore. And given that, I'm still going to go with Uriah Hall by KO just based off of the streak he's put together. And I believe, like I said, Weidman's career is starting to come to an end. Also, it would be ironic for Hall if he were to beat Weidman after beating Anderson Silva. Like, if you were to go back 10 years ago, he'd be Fighter of the Year after knocking those two out. So I'm still going to go with Uriah Hall. I think he's going to win this fight.
Yeah, Uriah Hall, he's coming in, like you just said. He just had that one of his best fights in his career against Anderson Silva, where he knocked him out. He was showing his jab and leg kicks really well. And then you got Chris Weidman, who everybody was writing him off. And then now he's on a 3-fight winning streak that he was able to pull off. He hasn't looked the same. He's definitely twice as slower than he was before. He hasn't been able to utilize some of his power and wrestling because he's a step slower. There's a reason why he went on that losing streak. It's because he lost some of that it factor that he had. But now he's been able to get back to that like 10 spot that he was at with the 3-fight win streak. I just feel like the difference in this fight is going to be Uriah Hall's quickness. Like, I feel like Weidman's going to use his wrestling in this matchup to try and get Hall down and then control the pace on the ground. And he's going to try and do the ground and pound and try and use his grappling against Hall to slow him down. And it's going to kind of be like Andre Arlovsky, how he's not the same killer, so he fights the decision or he wears his opponent out. That's what Chris Weidman's going to do. Whereas Uriah Hall, I think his best point of action is to use his jab. That's his strongest weapon. Use the jab, stay distance away, kick him, get him with the leg kicks from a distance, stay away. Use what Sirigan did against Rozenstruik, who he would hit in, come back out, hit in, come back out, and just keep doing that. Use the pace to your advantage. You got the more fresh fighter on hands. He's younger. And the big thing that changed Uriah Hall's career was his trainer. He switched over to Syair Saad a few years ago, and it's shown a lot of positive effects to it. Like, everything that he's done and succeeded with lately has because of the new trainer that he added to his team. And I just feel like I don't think it's going to go first round, but I feel like it's going to be a second round KO by Uriah Hall. One thing with Wyman now is usually after the first round, he slows down tremendously. It's like he has the first round with the gas tank, and then after that he just slows down to like a 10 speed from the 100 speed that he was at the beginning. He just doesn't have the gas tank anymore. So I feel like as long as Uriah Hall can weather the first round storm, he's going to be good, and he's going to get that second round knockout.
Yeah, it's confusing with Chris Wyman. He had that experiment up at light heavyweight that I think he dropped two straight, and then he came back down, and he finally got back on that winning track with this last win. So he's like, I think he's like 2-3 in his last five. He switched up training camps. He's usually with Sarah Longo, and I know he's been working with them too, but he's been doing a lot of work down in North Carolina with Wonder Boy, who I believe is his brother-in-law. So they're doing a lot of work down there, and I'm curious to see where he goes from there. But again, like you said, with Uriah Hall changing up the training camps, getting a new coach, there's still something about Uriah Hall that if you listen to his post-fight interviews, he always says, and it's been like this for like 3 years, I don't know if my heart's in the game anymore. I don't know if I want to do this, but he keeps showing up. I remember him fighting last against Anderson Silva, knocked Anderson Silva out, but he looked cautious the entire fight. You know what I mean? He drugged that fight out because it was one of his idols. And at the end, you see him, I believe he cried like a lot after the end of that fight.
Because he got did.
You don't want to beat the crap out of your heroes, but he has to. It's a fight game, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid that he does look up to Chris Wyman, too. They're both New York guys. They're both friendly. I'm curious to see if he goes in with the same mentality against Wyman, someone who he respects, somebody who he looks up to, and he kind of is hesitant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just curious to see which Uriah Hall shows up, because I don't want him to win and then Rogan interviews him or whoever's there and says, you know, I'm really not into it anymore. I wake up and I don't feel like fighting. But then you're four fight win streak, you're knocking on the door to a title shot. It's just, it's confusing to me, but I understand where he's coming from.
Yeah, I think Hall knows what's at stake here. Like, this is a really important matchup for him. He's right there at the bottom of the top 10. If he gets this, he'll be able to flirt around that top five and get a really, really established opponent there. So he knows he's going to have to win this. And then Wyman knows that if he loses this, that more than likely he's not done, but he won't get another title shot again. Like he'll be pushed outside the top 10, and then he'll have to be like the gatekeeper from now on, more so. Like, I could see him losing this and then fighting Kevin Holland next.
Yeah, I feel like even if Wyman wins this, he'd probably need like one or two more fights to even get a title shot. I don't know if an Adesanya Wyman fight is, you know, bank breaking at this point in Wyman's career. 10 years ago,
now. 10 years ago, easily, but not now.
Yeah, and I love Wyman. I think he's a great fighter. I enjoy all his fights, but it's hard to see some of your favorite fighters at the back end of their career. In my mind, he may feel like totally rejuvenated. He hasn't fought almost a year, so maybe he feels super great going in there. He's a young pup again, but I don't know.
Yeah, he just took too much damage in the downside of his career. And then with him getting older, he lost some of that swag and then gas tank that he was known for, that he was able to last. He used that wrestling, and then he had power in his hands. Now he doesn't have half of that. So it's like it's first round of bust for him.
Yeah, you're right. Yep.
But let's move on to the third fight of the card, which is the very first title fight. Here we got a women's flyweight championship matchup between Valentina Shevchenko going up against Jessica Andrade. Shevchenko is 20-3, is the -400 favorite, and then Jessica Andrade is 21-8 and is the +310 underdog. What do you see with this fight?
Those numbers are huge, man. The difference is crazy. This is a great matchup between two dangerous fighters. We all know that Valentina has walk through everyone in the flyweight division. She's riding a six-fight win streak with her last loss coming to Amanda Nunes. And I believe that was a split decision. And a lot of people think she might have got that nod. Valentina is a fighter who can finish the fight in a variety of ways and isn't afraid to go to the ground. She seems unstoppable at this point in her career. And then in walks Jessica Andrade, coming off a huge win from her fight against Chookagian, who was her first test from stepping up to flyweight from strawweight, and took on the number one contender and beat her in dominant fashion. With this fight, I see Andrade being the most dangerous fighter that Valentina has faced since Joanna in 2018. Now, that was after the Nunes fight. Andrade has a brawling style, whereas she just puts her head down and starts throwing, kind of like Jimmy Crute, but she's also got the strength to wrestle. Valentina is a whole other monster, though. I think this fight's going to go to distance, but I see Valentina winning this fight. And at the end, I think this forces a rematch with Amanda. I think that's the next fight for Valentina. She's dominating her division. There aren't any competitors stepping up to this. I know you might feel a different way, and I'm curious to see where you went with this one. But I think if she wins this, the next step is Amanda Nunes again at 135.
Yeah, like the way I see this fight is that it's going to be really good. You got Valentina Shevchenko. Her nickname is Bullet for a reason, because she's really fast with her hands and her legs. She likes to use her distance. Like, she comes in, hits you, comes out, it leg kicks you. She can do a little bit of everything. She's really quick, and then that's how she trains. She trains with her speed. She knows that if she gets you and then keeps you at bay and you can't get close enough to her, how are you going to beat her? Because she has that advantage with her reach advantage with her legs and her hands. Like, it's crazy how she can just reach you, and then you've got to get inside of her to get near her. Whereas, just like you said, Jessica Andrade, she's tough as shit. Like, she beat Caitlin, and then she beat Rose Namajunas before. No, she lost to her, but she has beaten her, and that's why she moved up. She wants to get a little bit of that speed back. And what she's seen going into this fight that she thinks she has advantages is she watched that Jennifer Maia fight the last time Shevchenko fought, and noticed a glaring weakness with Shevchenko, and it was the wrestling. When Jennifer Maia was able to get in there, she was easily able to take down Shevchenko with ease. The thing, though, with Maia was she wasn't able to keep Shevchenko down for that long. The difference with Maia and Andrade is Andrade has that physical strength on her side. She'll be able to take her down and keep her down because she has muscle and she has that training. She's trained to keep people down when she wants to get them down and then grapple. If she can keep the fight on the ground for a good period of time, she can steer rounds just by doing that. She can lay on there, do a little bit of damage, wear Valentina Shevchenko out, and then it'll be crazy to see what she'll be like later in the third, fourth, fifth round when she has already been on the ground and worn out a little bit. We have to see how her speed is then, because we've never seen that before. Even with the Nunes fights, they were basically all standing up. So they both were just trained shots. But this one, I think that Andrade, her path to victory will be the wrestling and then the ground and pound. Just wear her out. And I feel like Jessica Andrade is going to win this by unanimous decision. It could be a split decision. It could be. I think that she could steal this, but in order to do that, she has to get inside and get her down, which usually Shevchenko is pretty good at defending that and keeping that away by her kicks and her jabs. That's what she does to defend against it, to keep her fighters at bay. But Andrade's the type of woman that doesn't affect her that much. She'll get hit, but she'll keep coming in there, and she'll shoot and get that takedown. She just needs to keep her down, because if she can't, then this is going to be a long fight for Andrade, and Shevchenko will have her way. But if she can do it, like I think she will, she'll be able to pull off the upset.
Wow. You need to put some money down on this fight. Look at those numbers, man. If you're going with Jessica Andrade, you need to put some money down. I look at Valentina Shevchenko, and I see a real-life Black Widow. You know what I mean? She's like a ballerina who's got a gun tattoo, and she's just a killer. You know, she's a superhero. And I don't see Jessica Andrade winning this fight, but she's a beast too. You know what I mean? You see what she did to Rose that first fight. You know, almost decapitated her with that slam. You know what I mean? But the blueprint's out on Jessica too. She's been beat by people who Valentina has dominated. Like Joanna, you know, she went in there and put up a great fight, but Valentina got the nod. I feel like if the wrestling was such a weakness for Valentina, she wouldn't have, well, Amanda wouldn't have just stood there and traded with her for, what, 10 rounds. You know, they fought twice. She would have exploited that. There's a lot of ifs for Jessica to win this, but there's also a lot of ifs for Valentina to win this. It's going to be one hell of a fight. I also think that this could have the potential fight of the night, just because these two are powerhouses.
I think that's why Nunez fight was such a to people a split decision, where it could have went either way, and a lot of people thought Shevchenko won it. It's because they stood up and traded. Nunez didn't try and take her down, really, because she knew that Shevchenko was going to use the jabs and the hits, and then she was really quick. Nunez decided to make it power against speed, and she was able to pick it up because she was doing damage to Shevchenko because she has the weight advantage. She could have used the wrestling, but I think at that time she didn't do that as much as she does it now, because that was like 3-4 years ago. But I feel like Andrade, that the people that beat her, like you said, they have good takedown defenses. Shevchenko's, we don't know how good it is, but we do know that Jennifer Maia was able to take her down a few times with ease.
Yeah.
That's what we do know. And that's why Andrade, a lot of her camp, she's working with people that work on the takedowns, wrestling. She's getting people that are bigger than Shevchenko, and she's training with them. She's focusing on that. She's very confident with it. It's just that you got to see her do it on Saturday night. That's going to be the thing that's going to matter, is Saturday night, not doing it now. Doing it now will help you gain your confidence and help you work on it, but she's got to make sure she doesn't get caught with a left hook or something when she's going for the shoot.
Yeah, I mean, she has to get in. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
You go back to that Jessica Eye fight, right, with Valentina. Jessica Eye is a great wrestler. She tried to get in there, caught that kick. You know what I mean? It was just like, it's one of those things, like, you ever see a dead body? That was a meme after Jessica Eye got knocked out. I look back at those two Amanda fights, and had they not been championship fights and just been, like, fight night main events, five rounds, I think Valentina won both of them, to be honest with you. They were championship fights, so point fighting is not going to get you that nod. You have to do something spectacular, and she wasn't able to do something spectacular. But those fights could have went Valentina's direction. So this, I mean, I am hoping for this fight to happen, for them to win, for COVID to not get in the way. I know I believe both of these fighters are coming from South America. I don't want either one of them to not fight. You know what I mean? Because I want to see that Amanda fight. I want Valentina to take her next, be the next shot after Juliana Pena.
Yeah, I think Shevchenko's been training in Vegas right now, so I think she'll have it a little bit easier. But yeah, Andrade's come from South America.
Yeah, I know, but Valentina's like fight camp originally was in Peru, I believe.
Yes, so let's move on to the co-main event of the evening, which is another women's title fight. We got the women's strawweight championship, which is between Zhang Weili, who's 21-1 and is the -190 favorite, going up against Rose Namajunas, who is 10-4 and is the +150 underdog. What do you see in this matchup?
Honestly, I thought the numbers were going to be more similar to Valentina and Jessica with this fight, just because people are really high on Zhang. There are a lot of layers to this fight. First, you have the comments Rose made about communism, right? So you take the fight away, and then there's those those comments. Then you have the legacy aspect for this fight, and then you have the quest for Rose to win her title back. Every time people doubt Rose, she comes up with the win, but Zhang may be the strongest fighter Rose has faced. Despite both having wins over the former boogeywoman of the division in Joanna, both of Rose's wins were decisive, where Zhang's fight with Joanna went to a split decision. I think there are a lot of people who forget that because of how bad Joanna looked after that fight, it went to split. I think the outcome of this fight could be determined by who can get the fight to the ground. Zhang has a good armbar and is no slouch on the ground, but if Rose can get the fight to the ground, I think she's going to win. So I'm going to go with the underdog. First underdog pick in the night for me. I'm going to go with Rose by second round submission. I think she's going to lock in a Kimura.
I don't think Rose knows what she's getting into with this fight. She has that championship experience, which is crazy. She's only 10-4, and she won a championship already. And this is her, I think, third title fight total going into it. So yeah, that's almost a fourth of her fights have been title fights. But the thing that I see in Zhang Weili that maybe others don't see is her production. She averages six significant strikes a minute, and her output is a lot because she's so quick. She's like a machine. She just keeps on going. And just like with the Joanna, like a lot of people put it as a split decision, but in that fight, I had it for the one Zhang Weili because she was just out-producing Joanna. Like, Joanna was able to get some in, but it was just like, boom, boom, boom. There's a reason why her face looked so fucked up, but then Zhang Weili looked like she didn't get hit that much because she was doing so much damage. Then the name of the game is doing damage. You can hit somebody and win by just doing 100 light punches, but if you're doing 60 to 40 and then your damage output is three times as much as your opponent, you're going to know that you won. And that's why they went with Zhang Weili, not just because she was the champion, but because of her output of damage. Rose hasn't fought anybody like this. Even if she had fought Shevchenko, there's nobody like Zhang Weili. Like, she's small, but she puts in a lot of power within her striking. She can do a lot. Her gas tank seems like it's unlimited. She could go 7, 8, 9 rounds because that's what she's trained for. And one tidbit fact, her one loss was in her debut, pro debut. She lost her very first fight, and now she has ran off 21 straight wins. And she's only fought to get the title fight. It's crazy that when she got into the UFC, she fought 5 times in the span of a year to earn that fight. I think she did 4 or 5 in 6 months. Then she took 6 months to get ready for the title fight, won that, then took another 6 fights for the Joanna fight to defend it, and then now it's been a year and 2 months since that Joanna fight, between now defending it again. So she's had the longer layoff by a couple months over Rose, but I feel like with Rose I don't think she's going to take her seriously. I think Rose is just going to come in and be like, okay, I'm Thug Rose. Like, you're going to respect me. And she's going to overlook the champion, which is crazy to think. But I think Weili's going to come in here and knock her out in the third round.
Okay. I don't think Rose is going to go in there and underestimate her. She knows how much of a threat Weili is. You know, 21-1 speaks volumes to your opponents. Like I said earlier, like, Rose is always counted out of these fights. She was counted out in the Andrade fight. She was counted out in the Joanna fight. She's known as the underdog. You know what I mean? So the Thug Rose stuff is when she's in the cage and she's throwing hands and she's like knocking people out and choking them. But I don't think she's ever underestimated these people. This is a huge fight for her. And like I said, this is a legacy fight for both of them because they're both stacked contenders and former champion and champion in that division. I'm curious to see, let's say Weili wins, right? This was a very hard fight for me to pick, by the way. But let's say Weili wins. Do they then talk about the super fight with Valentina instead of Valentina versus Amanda? Do you think Zhang goes up to 125? Do you think she goes up to fight Valentina? Because I mean, Weili's a beast. She's a monster. Like, I am not slouching and think overlooking her either with this pick. I'm just gonna pick Rose because I always pick Rose when she fights. But this is a dangerous fight for anybody whether you're in 115, 125, you know, 105 if they ever do that.
That'd be interesting to see if Zhang Weili would consider moving up and doing that super fight, because that'd be fireworks, because you got two people that are really quick with their striking, and then both put out a lot of volume. Like, I think they're 1 and 2 in within the women overall within production. Just like I said, I think it's 6 strikes per minute for Ray Lee, and then 5 per minute for Shevchenko. So that would be a big time fight just for the women. It'd make like a big matchup, just like Cyborg and Nunez.
Yeah,
this would go up there. The one thing that I looked at that made the decision for me, Zhang Weili, was the common opponent, which was Jessica Andrade. Andrade was able to beat Rose, and then she got beat in the second matchup by Rose. But then you got Zhang Weili, who just dominated Andrade. She dominated her production. She knocked her out. It was just bad. Like, it was like that.
That first win against Rose was a fluke. Rose was winning that fight the entire fight, and all it took a slam, like a crazy slam, for her to lose that fight. That's all it took for Rose to lose. But that Weili versus Andrade, there's a conspiracy theory that a lot of people thought that Andrade took the fall, kind of like Ben Askren taking the fall against Jake Paul. Yeah. I'm not on that side. I expected so much more out of Andrade because of who she is. She's a brawler going up against another brawler, and she got handled easily. Like you said, easily she got handled. There's something to it. I don't know if it was a fake because that fight was in China. I don't know if it was a time delay, but there was something to that fight that Andrade didn't look like her normal self. She looked timid. She looked scared, kind of, in my mind. You know, she might have went there. I'm like, I'm fearless. But to me, she looked a little scared.
But that, to me, that's just Zhang Weili. She's coming in, like you said, China. She's undefeated in the UFC. The output, like, you could say what you want about Rose and how she's tough as nose, but when you get hit by Weili, like, it's gonna hurt a lot. Like, she pours it out into there. Like, and now, like you said, Andrade's fighting somebody again just like that. It's just that she has that path to victory against Shevchenko that she can utilize. There's really no like path to victory right now against Zhang Weili. It's just you're going to trade with her and hope you can drop her, or hope that you can exploit something that hasn't been seen before.
I think it's the ground game.
Yeah, which is that. Like, we have to see that. And right now, quick note, Zhang Weili, her takedown defense is at 100% right now. Yeah, she has never been taken down.
But she's also not fighting a lot of wrestlers or a lot of ground practitioners. You know what I mean? Joanna's not going to take you to the ground. Joanna's going to stand there and trade. Jessica's going to stand there and trade. Rose, you know, her foundation is wrestling, jiu-jitsu. So I'm curious to see. Yeah. That's why I think she's going to get the sub, because I think she's going to wear her out. But I will, right here, will say that I would never get in the cage with any of these women, because I think they would all kick my ass.
Nope.
And I'm 6'5". I tower over them. They'll still kick my ass.
Yeah. So you got a Rose by submission, and then I got Zhang Weili by a third round knockout. Nice. But let's move on to the main event of the evening, the reason why we're here. It's a welterweight championship matchup between the champion Kamaru Usman, who is 18-1 and is the -410 favorite, going up against Jorge Masvidal, who is 35-14 and is the +320 underdog. How do you see this going?
I mean, this is another one to put your money on, right? That +320 is glaring. But of all these fights, I think this was one of the easiest fights for me to pick on this card. I love the resurrection of Jorge's career, but Kamaru is on a whole other level. I don't expect this fight to be flashy, despite Kamaru's desire to get an emphatic win. He was on First Take talking about how he wants to, you know, baptize Jorge, and Jorge talks about how he wants to baptize Kamaru. But I expect this to be a clinic in wrestling. If this fight stays standing and Usman wants to showcase his evolving stand-up game, then that leaves him susceptible and open to be KO'd. So I take it to the ground like he did in the previous fights. Please don't stomp on his feet. I don't want to see that as a fan, and I don't want the commentators to continuously talk about him stomping his feet.
It's going to happen.
Understand, absolutely, and I understand the tactic. It's a great tactic. It's like Connor's, you know, collarbone strikes. I understand why this fight is happening, but to me, this wasn't the fight to make, and you and I have talked about this on any card where there's a welterweight contender match. But if I were to pick this, which I am, I think this is going to be a great fight, first and foremost. But I think that Usman is going to win by unanimous decision. A lot of 10-8 rounds in this, I think. But on the slight chance that Masvidal wins this fight, the potential matchups for Jorge Masvidal as welterweight champion are so entertaining. Jorge versus Colby, Jorge versus the winner of Edwards. If Edwards wins, you know, you get that old three-piece a chicken matchup or three-piece and a soda matchup. If Diaz beats Edwards, you get a double title. But like, imagine you got the BMF plus the welterweight. He's a two-strap champion, even though one is make-believe. That would be great. But all in all, I'm going to go with Camaro, and I'd like to see him run it back with either Colby or Edwards in his next fight.
Oh yeah, this is the one matchup that that Colby Covington is going to root for Kamaru Usman, which is crazy to think. This is the one time that he'll actually root for Usman to win. You got Usman coming in, of course, he's going to defend his belt for the fourth or fifth time. You got Masvidal coming in saying that the only reason that he lost last fight was because he took it on a week's notice. And I think that's why they made this rematch. Usman is telling him that you had your excuse before. You're going to have no excuses now because I'm giving you a full fight camp to prepare, and it's going to be the same exact result in me winning. Usman's going to I thought that was the perfect thing that he did before, holding him against the cage and then slamming his feet on his legs, because they slowed down Masvidal, and obviously they did. I think Masvidal is going to look a lot better with the weight camp, with the full fight camp. He's not going to have to cut 20 pounds within a week, which kind of slowed him down in that championship fight. But this is going to be a battle of if he can keep the fight on his feet, or if Usman's going to get it to the ground and do the into the clinch. If this is staying on the feet, Jorge Masvidal is going to have that one clear path to victory by knockout because of his hands. Early in his career, he was very frustrated with having decisions go against his way, and that's why he went to this extreme fighter mentality where he's going to go in, go guns blazing, and try and knock guys out. And then that's when he came up with the infamous knee to Ben Askren that changed his career. And then since then, he's been on a rise. But I feel like the very thing that's underrated with Usman's game is his wrestling. It's crazy to think that was one of his big glaring strengths. And it's overlooked now because of his takedown defense and a striking, which has handily got better by each fight. And now he's added leg kicks to his repertoire, which he didn't use against Masvidal. I'm interested to see what he does if he uses those leg kicks to keep Masvidal at bay. Because if he can use those leg kicks, kick him, and then go for a shoot, or just stuff Jorge Masvidal with his here and there takedowns that he tries to go for now, he's going to be looking good. He's going to want to wear Masvidal down like he did before. I think it's going to be a little closer of a fight. It might be like a 3-2 fight, just because there will be those shots where Masvidal can, just like Gilbert Burns did, where he can catch Usman in the face and knock him down, but he'll be able to recover enough to regain composure and then go with a different tactic. Like, Usman could get you at 2 or 3 different tactics. Like, he came in going brawling with Burns, got hit down, then he changed it to where he started using those leg kicks to slow him down, and then he went and took Burns down. So he has those built-in compartments that he can go to switch up the game plan at any point. I just think that it's going to be the same result, just a little bit closer of a matchup. I got Usman by unanimous decision in this fight.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Go
back to that Burns fight. Jorge Masvidal isn't Gilbert Burns. You know what I mean? Where Burns is lethal on his feet and on the ground. Masvidal's good on his feet. We haven't seen him wrestle. We haven't seen, you know, him shoot for many takedowns and be successful. So I definitely see, like, Kamaru's going in here. He's fighting for his country. He's got another champ in his corner with Ngannou. Jorge's going in here with nothing to lose. He's the he's the main event on the first card back with fans. He's the main event in his home state. He's going up against the champion. If he wins this, instant payday, instant headliner in all the next few fights. He can fight Diaz. He has his pick of contenders. If Kamaru wins this, his stock continues to rise. He's on every ESPN show yesterday. He was on every single show talking about the same thing. And Kamaru's got a face. He's got the vocabulary. He's got the persona. He's got the attitude of the face of the UFC. And he's not getting a lot of recognition. He's, you know, put some respect on my name at the end of each fight. If he wins and he beats Jorge Masvidal, I feel like you have your next kind of poster boy.
You have your next guy that you could potentially put in that top pound for pound rankings. Like,
Modelo's commercial.
Yeah. You have Habib, who just retired, so he's out of the rankings. And then you have John Jones, but John Jones hasn't fought. He's not even in any of the light heavyweight rankings anymore. He's just sitting there at the top of the pound for pound ranking. And I think it would be a detriment against the sport if they were to keep him there with a guy like Usman, who basically hasn't lost. And this would be his fifth defense, I believe it is. Going up against a lot of killers. Like, he's had like a tough division to fight against, and he's won every. He's basically, except for two guys, Wonderboy Thompson and Vicente Luque, he's cleared out the top 10 of the division.
Yeah, he's on a 16-fight win streak.
Mm-hmm. And the one loss was a crazy submission loss to a guy that I've never heard of before.
Right? It was like in like 2014 or something like that.
Yeah. But I see this going that way. Like, I think Masvidal has that chance to win by knockout, but that's basically it. Like if he had more to his game, it would be better. But it's like the I'll die by the sheer type of situation. He knows that he's gonna have to win fights by knocking guys out, so that's what he's going by. So that's his chance. And like, he'll have that chance to do that, which I think he would have to do in the first couple rounds, because as they go on, he's gonna lose some of his gas tank. Whereas Usman is very comfortable each round. He just hasn't had to go that far. But he did go far against Masvidal the first time. And he makes the excuse, oh, you didn't knock me out. You didn't knock me out. He wasn't trying to knock you out. He was trying to wear you out. He knew that you were already getting worn out. He already won it. So he was just doing that. But now he's motivated to knock you out. Like, he wasn't motivated before because you took it on short notice and he made it like a built-in excuse. Now he is motivated. He was able to knock out Gilbert Burns. He was able to knock out Colby Covington. He's been able to do that to his opponents. And I think Covington deserved the rematch because he actually fought after he lost and got a win against Woodley. And they're trying to downplay that win, but he did win compared to Masvidal, who hasn't fought since July, so it's almost a year. So I feel like it's either going to be, most likely scenario is going to be a unanimous decision, but then there's a chance I think Usman can knock him out in the fourth round.
Yeah, and either way, last question I have for you. Whoever wins this, Colby's up next, right?
Maybe, because right now you got a whole bunch of matchups going on. Like, Stephen Thompson's going up against Gilbert Burns. You got Leon Edwards against Nate Diaz. There's been talks about that, which is crazy. They said that there's a chance that the winner of that could get it. What I think is, if they don't book and say Colby Covington is the next in line right after this fight, I could see them booking Colby Covington against Vicente Luque.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too.
And a fight to see what if Vicente Luque can move up. Because like I said before, you got two guys in Wonderboy Thompson and Luque who haven't fought Usman before, but they're sitting there at 5-6, I believe it is. And then you got Burns, who is at, I think, number two now. So Thompson can beat number two Burns. He has that, oh, I just beat Burns, who had a shot, so now I should get one. But then if Vicente Luque could face Covington and then beat that, that would be the number one guy. So then you had both guys that haven't fought Usman would sit there at 1-2. And then Edwards, who lost to Usman, but that was like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, early.
So you could have two or three fresh faces in the UFC to put up against them even more. And if you were able to win those three, there's no saying that his legacy would be complete.
Yeah.
Defending it 8 times in that division on everybody in the top 10. Even John Jones can't say that he beat everybody in the top 10.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. That Luque Colby fight is huge because those two are like in the top 6 or 7 who don't have a matchup right now. So if that happens, yeah, for sure. I think Colby's going to be next just because he can quietly. I know he's filling in as like the backup for this fight to kind of step in if Jorge can't go, or even if Kamaru can't go, he's going to step in. But I think that's next fight. That's the biggest money fight of all of them, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, me too. Like you got to get him in there. That's why he's been waiting because he wants to get that shot. But he also knows that if he waits too much, that he's going to fall down and he's going to get a little bit of octagon rust. So I think that after this, if they say that it's going to be Diaz or Edwards winner, then you will see him book a fight with Vicente Luque because they both don't have a matchup. Because everybody else is basically booked. Literally everybody else. They even have Damian Maia booked up against Belal Muhammad. Like everybody in that top 10 or like top 15 has a matchup all the way up until August. But those two. So that's I think he would take it. I think he'd be kind of mad that he's not getting the title shot, but he'd at least know that he has a guy that's lethal and that would propel him. And then he could say, hey, I literally just beat Woodley, and then now I'm beating this upcomer, Vicente Luque. I definitely deserve a rematch now, even though I deserved it before.
Yeah. His stock isn't going anywhere. It's not rising or falling, but if he stays stagnant, it's going to start falling. These guys who are fighting and being a little more active are going to take a spot.
Yep, I agree. But that wrap things up with this UFC 261, Kamaru Usman versus Jorge Masvidal 2 preview edition. I got Jim right here at Active Geek. You can follow him at the Active Geek. They come out with stuff every Wednesday and then every Saturday right now. Check out all that stuff. They'll be finishing up the wrap-up of the Falcon and Winter Soldier this Saturday, the last episode. That's been an amazing show. It sucks that it's only 6 episodes long.
Yeah, really does.
But keep a lookout for when they do it. I believe you guys are doing it for Loki as well.
Yeah, we'll do an after show with Loki.
Yeah, so check that out once it comes out in June. But check out all their episodes on audio, every audio outlet for Active Geek. And then also check us out on Cage My IQ right here on the card. All the handles for Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch. And definitely subscribe to our Twitch and YouTube channel as we put all of our content on there. And once again, this is Cage My IQ, the best place for MMA content. And then we are affiliated with the Sports Box, which you can find here on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and then also subscribe to them on YouTube. There's plenty of sports podcasts for you. Whatever you like, most likely it's there. So definitely check them out. Great group of guys. But once again, I'm your host, D-Bake. This is my co-host, Jim. You guys have a wonderful rest of your day.
See ya.
Thanks. Thank you for watching this episode of Cage My IQ on the Sports Box. Please remember to follow us on all of our social media outlets. On Facebook at Sports Box Show, Twitter at Sports Box Show, Instagram at The Sports Box Show. Find us on YouTube and join Outside the Box, our Facebook sports discussion group. The Sports Box is brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And also our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and use promo code THEBOX at sign up for 10 free points. Thank you for joining us.